Hello and welcome to the British Equestrian Podcast. We are back and this time our big topic is concussion. If you've been following us on social media, you'll have noticed that we're putting out quite a lot of assets and facts and graphics and myth busters and all sorts around this topic because it's a really, really important one and one that we are very passionate about spreading the word and educating people about. Hence this podcast. We've actually got two coming up, which is very exciting. But this first one, we're gonna give you kind of a crash course, pun not intended, in concussion, kind of what it is, the basics, and really what you should do if you suspect someone has a concussion, because that quick response and getting things right when that happens and then the recovery period afterwards is really, really critical. So to talk about all of this, you should know her quite well if you follow the podcast regularly. Ash Wallace is joining me again. You heard her tell us all about female health last month, and concussion is another topic that she's very, very passionate about. Ash is our world-class programs athlete health lead, and she's the lead human physio as well, based at the UK Sports Institute at Bisham Abbey. Welcome, Ash.
Thank you, Rach, and good to join you again. I'm really looking forward to this podcast, definitely an area that I'm equally passionate about, and female health and concussion is certainly right up there, and at the moment a really hot topic across all sports, but definitely in our sport one that we need to be certainly more aware of, and our drive, as you know, is really raising that awareness and also getting the education out there to everyone.
Definitely. And because as you say, like concussion in sports like rugby is such a hot topic and everyone's very aware of it and very, very clued up. But in sports like equestrian, which is a high risk sport, at the end of the day, we're climbing on these sort of half ton at very unpredictable animals. And, you know, more often than we'd like, hitting the deck or getting knocked or jolted, and even just sort of, you know, we're out and about on rough terrain and things like that, even, you know, falling over in the lorry park or something like that could cause Absolutely. Something like this. Yeah. So as I say, you know, it's something we all need to be far more aware and clued up on. But let's kind of start at the very beginning then. What actually is a concussion?
Very simply, concussion is an injury to the brain resulting in a disturbance in brain function. So the other word that we use is we often call it a traumatic brain injury. And there's obviously a scale of injuries, of brain injuries, from a skull fracture and a bleed on the brain being the worst, to then concussion, which is the other side of that broad spectrum, if you like. But the interesting thing with a concussion is that it is a disturbance to the brain function, not the structure. And I think that is where, certainly in the last 10 years, there's been so much more research into concussion. But the difficulty with concussion is, unlike if you've got a fracture, unlike if you've got a bleed on the brain, you can do a CAT scan, you can do an MRI, and you can actually see something. The problem with a concussion is, because it's functional, so we can only really diagnose it with symptoms, you can't see anything on a scan. And that is where, that's why I think concussion is not taken seriously. You know, if we have someone who has fallen and has got a fracture, or we can see there's actually a significant bleeding on the brain, we take that very, very seriously. But concussions, we don't tend to. And exactly as you've said, we're very aware of it in other sports. And unfortunately, those sports it's only really come to light now, because if you look back longitudinally and retrospectively, it wasn't taken seriously 15 years ago. Now we're starting to see the impact of that. And we now know that we need to take this a lot more seriously. So a functional, not structural. And that, I think, is one really important message. There are going to be lots of messages in this podcast, but this is probably one of the most important ones.
Yeah. And I think, and also probably something that's very key to point out here, is you don't have to hit your head to get a concussion. That's one of the very common misconceptions with this, is that it's to do, obviously, as you say, it's a brain injury, so it must be caused by a blow to the head, but it's not, is it? It could be anywhere in the body.
No, exactly. So the mechanism of a concussion, and exactly as you said, can be caused by a direct blow to the head, or it can be, and we see that, we mostly see that actually, that it's actually a whiplash type injury, so that you can hit your shoulder and that can have impact on what's happening in your brain. And I think an important concept when we talk about the mechanism is, those people that don't know, our brain is really like a jelly-like substance, and it's got gray matter and white matter. And that's how it's made up. And the interesting and what's coming out of research now is before they used to think that concussion, I mean, a lot of people would say to me, oh, I know what concussion is, that's bruising of the brain. And it's not bruising of the brain. They used to think that because your skull got hit, the brain would hit against the skull and therefore there would be bruising. But now we understand the gray and white matter got different densities. So if you can imagine something, whether you hit your shoulder, your body, or whether you have a direct blow to the head, and you've got this big jelly-like mass of substance that's moving, but it's moving at different speeds. So it's called an acceleration deceleration injury, because your gray matter and white matter, different densities, move at different rates. And therefore what happens is you start to get, it's a shearing injury. So you get this shearing in our brain. We've got all these neurons, all these areas that allow us to function as human beings. And what happens is they get stretched, and they get stretched and they get torsioned. They don't tear. That's why we can't see it on an MRI, but they do get stretched. And that is the mechanism, this sudden deceleration, acceleration is the mechanism of injury. And that is what causes us to have all the various symptoms. And I'm fascinated at the moment because of what we're able to do with technology. Is if you think of a neuron in the brain, it's got a, and I'm not going to go into all the biology of that because that would probably just turn people right off, but you've got a body of a neuron, you've got a long tail, and then you've got something called a dendrite, and you've got millions of them in your brain. And basically they have to talk to each other in order for us to function. And what happens if you can imagine where you have this fast deceleration, acceleration in the brain, this shears and it stretches that neuron, it stretches that sheath particularly. And that's why we get that sudden, anyone who has had a concussion, we have what we call the excitatory phase, and that's that initial, you've hit your head or you've taken a blow, a whiplash type injury, and you feel all the various symptoms, which we're going to talk about now. And that's what concussion is. That's the mechanism of it. And that's what is happening. And we, as I say, some of the technology that sports, and I think it will come into equestrian. We see that a lot in rugby players now wearing mouth guards, and they are instrumented. So they've got little sensors in them. So we used to do, in the skull caps of rugby players to look at what the forces are going through the brain. Now it's far better with the mouth guard. Boxing are using it, taekwondo are using it, and rugby and in the Six Nations, a couple of the teams actually were wearing instrumented mouth guards. And what we're able to find out now is you have a linear stress and you have a rotational stress. And you can imagine with what I'm talking about, if the the rotational stress we find is much more impactful on symptoms. So there's some of that science is, as I say, we won't go into massive detail today, but I think really important for everyone to understand what is happening in the brain, to take this more seriously and to understand why we get the symptoms we do.
Definitely, because I mean, it's so easy to brush it off. You hear people say, oh, I've got a concussion, oh, you know, it's fine, and just get back on with what they're doing. But as you say, it's a traumatic brain injury that's what we need to think of it as, is a traumatic brain injury, which sounds so much more serious than a concussion.
Yeah, and I think also we tend to, and of course we can ride through it, and of course we can function through it, and people do, and people have. But I think in fact, there's a paper that's just been published around, we now know that the knock-on effect of continuing to do your sport or activity, whether you are in a high-level sport or not, is the risk of further injury is great. So there's a great paper at the moment, is the increase of anterior cruciate ligament injuries after concussion is huge. So there's really good evidence. We're doing a lot of studying within the Institute, is looking at all the concussions across sports to see, well, if someone had a concussion, had they gone on to get other injuries? And we're starting to track that in obviously the World Class program. And I definitely know they're doing that in horse racing. So I think that data is really important, because it's what happens as a result of not taking this seriously and as a result of continuing to train or compete through the symptoms.
Yeah, and you know, we'll get on to the symptoms in a minute, but when we do, you can start to see actually how quite a lot of these are really going to impact your performance, your ability to stay in the saddle, be balanced, all of those kind of things that are what's going to keep you safe. And then it's, yeah, as you say, it's then far more likely you're going to have another injury, fall, accident, whatever, that is then going to cause far more serious problems.
Exactly. And the worst thing that you want is to have a secondary head injury during that sort of very, very vulnerable time, which is the first sort of 30 to 40 days post a concussion. But I will also, I mean, people are probably starting to listen to this podcast thinking, oh my word, you know, you're going to wrap me up in cotton wool. Yeah. But one of the key messages and one of the real take home messages that I want to share is there's a lot we can do to really help you improve and get over the symptoms quicker. And that's one of the reasons why this, I think doing this awareness is so important, because in the past, we used to just say, put people into a dark room. And I know we're going to come to this a little bit later, but put everyone in a dark room and you just wait till those symptoms go. But we've actually, again, learned, and research is telling us, very recent research, that actually there's some really good, and I'm going to give some of those tips today about things that you can do to make sure you do recover fully. So this is not about, and I feel very strongly about this, this is not about putting cotton wool around anyone competing or taking part in sport. This is about good care, being really proactive in what we can do to help people recover. And it's there's still a lot of poor practice generally. If you go to an A&E, and I'm not critical at all of the NHS, but if you go into an A&E, they will clear you for, you've got no bleeding on the brain, you've got no fracture, go home. And the concussion side of things are not dealt with, and indeed probably not taught. So that's one of the reasons why the more that we're self-aware and the more we can help ourselves, the better.
Well, that leads us then very nicely onto how we actually can spot if someone's got a concussion. So you know, you're out and you're at a competition, or you're out on the yard with your friends and you see someone come off their horse, for instance.
Yeah.
What should you be looking for then to sort of think, okay, maybe they've got a concussion, maybe there's a problem here?
One of the first things that we probably need to differentiate is, because if you get to someone and they're unconscious, please don't move them. So we're going to talk around signs, what to look for, but before, there's some red flags. There are absolutely some red flags that, please, if you get to someone and they're unconscious, call for help, call for 999, or if you're at a competition, make sure that you call for medical help. There could, of course, be far more severe injuries with respect to a spinal injury. So our red flags that we're looking at is, and indeed, if they, one of the other things that I'll always say, when you, even if you suspect a head injury, do not take the helmet off. And again, for obvious reasons, taking the helmet, if there is any underlying cervical spine injury, that it could cause absolutely catastrophic worsening. So when we're looking at, if you get to someone and they've got severe neck pain, so most of the time, if it's a severe injury, they're going to be, they're more likely to be lying still. I'm more worried when I approach someone when they're just lying there and they're not moving. They're still, they may be conscious, but they're not moving, as opposed to someone who's screaming around and writhing around. And you pretty much know they might have an injury, but it's not going to be a catastrophic injury. So if you get to someone and they are really, really clutching their head, they might be vomiting at the time. If they've got any weakness or tingling in the limbs, please, that's a red flag. And that is, do not get involved at all. Call for medical help. When we're looking at signs, so when we are, as you say, we might have got to someone who has had a fall, he's actually managed to get up on their feet, and you get to them, the typical things that we will see with a concussed person. And remember when I spoke about a few minutes ago around what's happening in the brain. So they've had that fast acceleration, deceleration. You've got these synapses that have been stretched, and you've got loads of, you've got a real, I sort of call it a chaotic electrical disturbance in the brain. And what then happens is you may get someone that's looking at you, but they're a little bit vacant. You often get, they might, so we have things like, we have things like Maddox questions. So that's been set in the rugby setting. In equestrian, we have our own setting, well, our own questions. So you may want to ask, which horse are you riding today? Which venue are you riding at? How did you get here today? What's your competitor number? Now, the competitor number sometimes can be a bit tricky at the best of times, but those, it starts to give you an idea. If someone can't answer that, they don't know what venue they're at, that's showing you that they are definitely, they're definitely concussed. And there's sometimes the irritability sometimes is early on, although that's sometimes late. So they'll often be going, go away, I'm fine, I want to get back on, or there's nothing wrong with me. One of the key signs that I've seen so often is grabbing their head. They will absolutely hold their head because there'll be this crazy energetic electrical fields going on in their brain, and they'll try and hold their heads to who knows why we do it, but certainly you do see that. Obviously, you sometimes have, as I've mentioned in the red flags, loss of consciousness. But in concussions, it's less than 10% of concussions lose. And again, that's another myth that everyone thinks you've got to be knocked out to have a concussion. And that's absolutely 90% of the cases they haven't lost consciousness. And probably one of the obvious ones is balance. So you'll you'll see someone get up and sort of totter away in a strange sort of gait. Those are, for me, the really key indicators that someone has got a concussion. And what you should be doing is they absolutely are not getting back on that horse. You should absolutely, if they are a young person, so it's calling their guardian or their parent, if it's an adult, they clearly will be removed from competition, but someone, their husband or their groom, someone needs to take responsibility for that person. Remove them absolutely, make sure that they get some hydration, and we continue to monitor. We'll talk a little bit what that monitoring looks like as we go. But those are the main signs that you'll see.
Yeah, so definitely it's that key thing of not letting people, as you say, well, number one, get on the horse, but also go off on their own as well.
Correct.
And I think there's probably something that's very key, and you know, sort of kind of takes us into this monitoring side of things, is the fact that concussion symptoms, you're not going to see them all straight away. They're going to develop over time, which is why, you know, that person might have had their fall earlier in the day, even.
Yes.
So, you know, but it's still worth keeping an eye on them and making sure that they aren't having any issues and any problems, and making note of them if they are as well, because then that's something that you can feed back to the doctor, or even just that emergency contact or parent or guardian or whoever is going to come and take them off your hands and hopefully Yes. Get them some medical attention.
I was going to say, I would always, and again, research tells us that those, probably one of my top tips for the end of this is those people that seek help from a medically trained person, be it a doctor, be it a physio, but someone who knows what they're doing in concussion, have better outcomes. And that's not just pushing it because I'm a physiotherapist. It's just fact, is you can really deal with that. And we will talk about those initial stages. But yes, I mean, there's some very, when we talk about the initial care plan, we'll go on to that. We probably want to speak a little bit about what it feels like. What are the symptoms? And again, so we're looking for the signs. So we see what outwardly someone looks like, but what will they be telling you around some of their, and again, when we're thinking about this cascade, and your point, Rach, absolutely important. And there's many examples of this delayed cascade, which can happen up to 6 to 12 hours after a head injury, which is why we tell people to monitor. Not because we want to wrap them up in cotton wool, but because we know that this sometimes happens. And the very famous concussion injury was that of Liam Neeson's wife, the Jolie Richardson, very famously on the ski slopes, baby slopes, knocked her head, thought nothing of it. You know, 6 hours later, died.
Yeah.
And that was with a bleed, obviously not a concussion. But that's why we look at it. And we have, I've spoken about that initial excitatory phase, which is when the soup of all these ions are moving through your brain. And then you get what we call spreading depression. And basically what that is that you've got this energy required to try and get everything back to normal. And that's why there's so much fatigue related with concussion. But it's fatigue at a metabolic. Anyone who's had a concussion will tell you, I feel exhausted. That foggy brain, that blurred vision that they get, the nausea, the headache. So often the words, I feel like I'm in a fog, is the reason why you've now got this. And again, we know from what we can do with functional MRIs with people who have got concussions, is this starts about 2 hours after a blow to the head, if it is a true concussion, if there's been enough forces to cause a concussion. And it really dips, the energy really dips, and it takes, I think the lowest point of that energy is between 5 and 15 days, and then it starts to come back up to normal again. And this is at a metabolic, it's not about energy, but what you put into your body, but it's about the metabolism because of what's happened to the injury at a cellular level. And that's why the 21 days, we say to not return to competition or sport for 21 days. We haven't made up that number. It's absolutely based on science, because we know that's how long That's without any kind of treatment. Now, obviously, with treatment, and we're going to talk about that and talk about things that you can do, you can accelerate that. But that's why we set it at not at 21 days, because we know that that's what happens to your brain. And that's how your brain, from a functional point of view, takes to recover fully.
Definitely. And as you know, anyone who's had concussion, and I've had it as well in my life, people will tell you it takes a long time to get back to normal. Really long time. And that explains why it's, you know, at the time you're just sort of riding through the symptoms. But as you say, there is this all this metabolic stuff going on behind the scenes that's causing it all. Yeah. So let's delve into this kind of aftercare side of things. So, you know, you've recognized that this person's got concussion. They've been removed from the field of play, taken away from the horse. What happens next? And what happens in that sort of initial sort of couple of days, first of all, that we'll go into?
I always talk about the sort of first 48 hours are essential. So as I've touched on, you want to monitor. So the most important thing is avoiding anything that is obviously going to make this worse. So something like caffeine, because caffeine is a stimulant. So we've got this already crazy electrical chaos going on in the brain. And if we have a bit of caffeine with that, that's just going to increase the electrical activity. So that's why we say no caffeine and why we say no alcohol. Alcohol as well, you've got, if you think about this tissue, this very sensitive brain tissue that's been stretched and sheared. And then you have alcohol, which again is a stimulant, and it also vasodilates. It'll just increase in fact, make those symptoms a lot worse. We also want to be really clear on what symptoms are coming from the concussion and not something else. So those are the big, big no's directly afterwards. We've already touched on the fact that you don't want to leave this person on their own, because they may get a delayed response. So that's why we make sure that they're absolutely not driving, and we want to get them home. And what used to be, and many people say, you put them in a dark room for, you know, 2 days and that's going to help. And we've actually learned again, and this is fairly recent, that actually we don't want to completely. For me, there's probably 5 really important steps to take afterwards. So the first 48 hours is, and certainly the first 24 hours, is just monitoring, making sure. One of the big things, particularly if you had competition, is the likelihood of someone being dehydrated is quite high. So you want to make sure that they get hydrate really quickly, preferably with something with an electrolyte, which, well, anyone will say on the World Class program, I nag them to take the electrolyte drinks, not only because, of course, we know that that's important for performance, but also we know that there is a protective element if you do have an head injury. So those would be my first, is make sure they're hydrated. And then from a food perspective, and often there's that nausea, so we're really not that hungry, but we want to get some high carbohydrates, because remember I spoke to you about that metabolic and that fatigue, and carbohydrate, glucose, is what helps and give us fuel for the brain. So, you know, a light pasta, something like sweet potatoes, something where you've got, and we're going to, I know that's going to go out as nutritional advice, but so, so important. The evidence that is showing us around looking after what you eat after a concussion really impacts on how long you're going to have this concussion for. So once they're home, you've got sure that they've got some food in them, that they're hydrated, you monitoring, no drugs. So absolutely a no to, there's often, because they've got a headache, they're like, well, I want to take an anti-inflammatory, I want to take something like Nurofen. Absolutely not, for the same reason, is you want to stay as clear as possible to monitor this. After 12 to 24 hours, if they've still got a headache, they can take perhaps a little bit of paracetamol, but otherwise stay clear of all other drugs so we can really monitor very clearly. And the self, so as I said, the initial advice used to be in a darkened room. And what we advise is absolutely limit what you're exposing yourself to from a physical point of view. So the number one is, do not do anything that's going to risk you having another head injury. So that's why we say do not get on your horse, because the risk of falling off or the risk of further injury, the same as we'd say to someone, don't go and ride a bike, because the risk of falling and re-injuring your brain is incredibly high. But whereas in the past we would have said avoid all activity, what we're learning is absolutely moderate. So when you get home, you rest, If you're light sensitive, then absolutely just go into a room that's a little bit dark, and so you just let those sensors settle down. But what we do know is after 48 hours, you can definitely do a little bit of light activity. And for me, the most important thing is being really self-aware. And that's why we speak about how to recognize those symptoms and signs if you're living with someone. So say, for example, even day one, I've got a bit of a headache and I feel a little bit nauseous. But if I get up and I go for a walk around the garden, and my headache is about a 3 out of 10, and I walk around the garden and it stays a 3 out of 10, it's absolutely fine to do that. If I get up and I go for a walk and I suddenly think, oh my word, my headache's now a 5 or 6 out of 10, that's telling you it's too much. So being aware and being really sensitive to what symptoms you have, and I always encourage people, write it down. Get a sense of, you know, I feel nauseous, I feel this, I feel that, I feel really, you know, a bit foggy. So then if you do expose yourself to something like going for a walk, an activity, you can immediately say, well, that's too much. And then you bring it back. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And yeah, as you say, it's very important to monitor and be aware of what you're feeling. Yeah. And I think as well, it's probably worth touching on the sort of the mental strain as well.
Yes.
As well as the physical, is being very aware of what you're doing that's taxing your brain in a mental capacity as well. And that could be as simple as scrolling on your phone and things like that.
Yeah. And again, for my advice always for the first 48 hours is to definitely reduce that. Don't go and lie, if you are at home, don't go and watch the telly for hours and hours and hours, because again, your brain has got so much to deal with that you want to just, it doesn't mean you can't do any of that, but watching for short periods of time, absolutely fine. And the same with, reading you might open a book and think, oh my word, I'm my blurred vision, or I'm feeling dizzy, don't do it. So I definitely advise to just absolutely moderate, not stop. Don't go and lie in a room for 48 hours, darkened room, and just lie there, cocooned. We know that actually slows down, because we've learned around that energy and that energy that causes fatigue. What we do want is, as soon as we can, to just expose to a bit of light activity. But that's why I always try and advise anyone who I speak to is, whatever makes it worse, you stop immediately. And certainly if it's a young child, I would be, where there's perhaps less awareness, I would absolutely be reducing. And I think that's really important. Any tablet use, any phone use, I would absolutely deplete that, just to try and externally control that. And you might have someone as well with a concussion who's really irritable and really difficult. And actually, certainly if they can't self-monitor, I would definitely err on doing less in that 48 hours, because the chance of them perhaps doing something to do more harm is really high. So that's the first 48 hours, which I always call the golden 48 hours. I always advise around eating clean, really making sure lots of your green vegetables, lots of colourful berries, something that doesn't load the system massively, and absolutely avoiding processed food. And we just know that helps the brain. Good nutrition, there's some evidence that as soon as you have a concussion, it affects your gut health. And we all know that symbiotic relationship between gut health and the health of our bodies generally, and that's no different in concussion. And I think we're going to see as the evidence and research comes to light, that that's going to be more of a link. So that would be absolutely, for me, really, really key.
I'd quite like to touch on sleep, because certainly, this is one of these things, you might be one of these myths that you're going to completely bust for me, but it was always one of those things you were always told that you shouldn't sleep if you've had a concussion. People should keep you up and keep you awake. Is that accurate, or is that something that modern research has sort of knocked on the head a bit? Again, pun not intended.
No, I'm really glad you asked that question, because that is it is important. It's absolutely fine to sleep, and in fact there is a little bit of a divergent here in research, where some say actually let someone sleep and as long as it's a normal sleep, 7-8 hours. But there's a certainly a group, and I would probably agree with this group, and certainly that would be my practice, is once you've got someone home, they're wanting to go and get to sleep, I would just every, not every hour, but every 4 hours, just go in and just gently, they don't have to wake up, but just gently. And if they can be aroused, so if, you know, you think, oh yeah, and they're like, how are you doing? Do you want some water? And they actually, they can be aroused from sleep, then that's fine. And I would do that probably twice in the evening. And again, the reason why you're doing that, if you're thinking about that sort of 6 to 12 hours where they could be getting worse, you want to make sure that you're not missing something. So definitely not to keep awake, because you do want to just close the system down. But you do, my advice, and there is differing from research, but what my advice would be, and certainly if you've got children, I would be every 2 to 4 hours, just going and just gently arousing. And if they, you don't have to wake them up completely, but if they can come out of their sleep and they can say something that's audible and makes sense, then let them carry on sleeping. But that's a great question. And that to me is good practice.
Brilliant. Thank you. So we've had our, now we've had our golden 48 hours and we're moving towards, you say, as you say, we're starting to pick up some gentle activity. What should the process then be that you're going to follow to hopefully eventually get you back in that saddle and get you riding again?
So we talk about a graduated return, and I'm going to for me, there's various areas of concussions that are missed, I think, by practitioners. One of the reasons why I say to people, just get in touch, even if you see someone once or you speak to them over the phone, just get good advice as to how you, it's pretty hard to manage this on your own. It's not the treating it is actually, so what we do is actually quite simple, but the complexities of the brain can make it very, very difficult and very complicated. So the reason why we do graduated is because we know that you want to, the first thing we want to do is get your cardiovascular ability back, because the reason for that, if you remember what I said about, you've got this inactivity in the brain and you're trying to increase the blood supply now to try and help your brain heal. So the first thing that we want to do is we want to, as I said, go for a walk, but you want to make sure that everything you're doing is not increasing. So the really easy rule of thumb, and we do it, and there's something called a Buffalo treadmill test, but I advise anyone, and you don't need to do it on a treadmill. My preference actually with equestrian athletes is to do it on a bike. And you basically just cycle and you start off really gradually, but you're monitoring what symptoms have I got. Do I feel dizzy? Do I feel nauseous? And at the same time, you are, you know, we've all got, not all, everyone, but if you've got a watch, or you measure what your heart rate is doing. And then you go as hard as you can. And if you suddenly think, oh, hang on, I'm not feeling great now, I'm feeling a bit more nauseous. Again, that rule of thumb, if it's about a 4 out of 10, but now it's sort of going up to a 6, or I'm feeling really not great, take your heart rate. And whatever that heart rate is, you then can do between 80 and 90% of that heart rate. So say, for example, I can do 90 RPMs and you can see exactly what you're doing on a bike, or if you're running and you can see what speed you're doing, then if my heart rate is 100 and I'm starting to feel all my symptoms are getting worse, then you just make sure that you exercise at 80, your heart rate's at 80. It's a really, really well-researched return, and it means that you don't overdo things. So number one for me in that graduate return is starting to do, I want everyone to use that measure and whether that measure is you're walking from outside your house to a tree and back, and you get, so it can be measured in speed or it can be measured in distance. But it gives you an idea of actually how you're doing. So it makes sure that you're not going to overdo it. So cardiovascular, we know, is the most important area that we need to recover. And then you start to move, particularly in our equestrian world, is once you can get up to a good heart rate and your symptoms aren't getting worse, then you can start to do, and along with that is then activities around the yard. So, you know, brushing, cleaning out, doing some work, which you probably don't want to do around the yard, but that's a really good way. And again, if you're using that rule of thumb, and again, some people would say, well, actually, I don't want to walk. I'd rather go and measure it by, you know, how many stables I'm mucking out. Great, do that. And if you get to 4 stables and you're actually feeling worse, then you know, well, actually, I'm going to just do 3 tomorrow. And the next day you may be able to do, the next day you may be able to 5 or 6. And you can increase that really, really nicely. And we've got I think we're going to publish it, is our really clear staged guidance and that graduated return to make sure that you not, the minute you push your brain, and you mentioned it as well earlier, it's not just the physical, it's the mental side of things as well. So, you know, meeting and if you've got young kids going to school, make sure that they are ready, because the most important thing when you're in your own environment is being able to control that. It's when you get into an environment like you're going back to school, you're going back to university, or you're going to the workplace and you can't control it, and you've got meetings and you've got noise, then it becomes, it will slow your healing down. So that's why we say in those first 2 weeks, just be really kind to yourself. And the better you are, and the more that you understand about that graduate return, the better you will be. And most people will recover within 3 to 4 weeks. And we know that because we know that that's what happens from an energy point of view, from your brain and the healing.
Yeah, and I think it's worth pointing out as well that everyone is different. I mean, number one, the symptoms you're going to have in the first place will differ from person to person. But as you say, that recovery rate will differ from person to person as well. So it's no point sort of basing your recovery on someone else at the yard who had a concussion 6 months ago and trying to copy what they did, because yours is very different to them. And there's no point, as I say, you know, copying people. You've got to listen to your body, listen to what your brain is telling you. And take it at your own speed, because it's not a competition. It's not a race to get back on the horse. And I think, as we've said several times in this podcast, the kinder you are to yourself, the better you take that recovery, the better the outcome is going to be. Yeah. And if you're kind to yourself, you'll get there quicker in the end by not pushing yourself.
100%. And I think one of the things that there's and I've seen this quite often is it's something called persistent concussion syndrome. And so that's really anyone who goes past that sort of, which we know that 21 days, so that 3 to 4 week period where they're still getting concussion symptoms. And I think it's really important to note, and I think one of the areas that we really overlook with concussion still, in certainly in the medical profession, and I think certainly as individuals, is whilst we've had this, obviously, injury to the brain or dysfunction to the brain, there's also a big autonomic. So we have something called a sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. And some may know that a sympathetic is your fight or flight. So if something's coming as a danger, your eyes will dilate, your ears will become more sensitive, all your blood will go down to your limbs because you're going to run for your life, that type of, and then you get your parasympathetic, which is called rest and digest. So we have saliva production and we chilled and we're going to, you know, it's what you want when you go to sleep. And that's why one of the things that gets disrupted, again, from a metabolic, and you spoke about sleep, is often people will say to me, God, I feel on edge. And you get, and this is this automatic, your sympathetic nervous system gets really, and again, that varies from person to person. But if you are noise sensitive, if you are light sensitive, that autonomic is really when you want to avoid. It's one of the key things that causes this persistent. And that's because we, if you are sensitive to that early on and you don't actually listen to that and don't actually avoid and then gradually introduce noise and light again, it can create this real cortisol surge, which becomes a real problem, because then you have a huge amount of sleep disruption. And I see that a lot in persistent concussion symptoms. And the other thing that is really key, particularly with equestrian riders, is the symptoms of concussion are very similar to the symptoms of whiplash. So often I see riders where they've had a concussion and they've been diagnosed a concussion, but actually when you start to assess them, they've got a lot of issues in their neck. And actually, so often a lot of those symptoms can be taken away, but just some really good cervical spine manual treatment. So one of the reasons why I always say, just get in touch with, and you can go onto any website, NHS or private, to find people who have got a experience in that, because there's simple things that you can do for your neck and simple things. The other two areas that we speak about is your vestibular system, which is your balance from your ears. So you can imagine if you've had a bit of, particularly if you're older, we all carry sort of crystals in our ears. And with a bit of a bash to your head or the rest of your body, that can sometimes dislodge the crystals. So you think, oh, I'm dizzy, but your dizziness can come from your neck. It can come from your ears, your vestibular system, and it can also come from the fact that the head injury has caused a bit of dysfunction with what we call your oculomotor, the way your eyes work. So the important thing for me, and where seeing a professional will certainly help, is I see when symptoms go past a sort of 4-week period, there's normally a dysfunction in the neck, either vestibular, which does need a specialist to show you what to do, or vision. And there's simple things, simple eye exercises that you can do, but it's always good to just let someone have a look and differentiate what is causing most of the problem. Because sometimes just with a simple treatment of your neck, you can take away 90% of those symptoms. And I think that's really important for people to know. And one of the things that I said right in the beginning is this is really helping people become aware that there's so much you can do for this. It's not a passive. It used to be it's not a pathology, but it used to be something that was treated really passively. And now we know that we want to be respectful of it, and we want to understand how that we graduate load, but we don't want to be passive. And I thought that was just important to share as well, that I think that's often what I see when it goes on past that 4-week, there's some other areas that we need to address.
Definitely. I think that really highlights as well the importance of having some, you know, a qualified medical practitioner or someone with that knowledge as a support to you as you're going through this process. You know, it's not being clever to try and go through it on your own. If you've got that support there, even, as you say, even if it is just picking up the phone or having that conversation, then it can make things a whole lot easier, and you can hopefully get to the bottom of what's going on and a better understanding of what's going on. And as we keep banging on about, getting you back on the horse far more quickly.
And getting you on, and, you know, for me, it's getting on and making sure that there's no, you know, we're not going to talk about all the long-term effects of this, but certainly that is coming to light massively in other sports. And I think we don't seem to have that impact from you know, early dementia, that type of area that we're seeing in other sports, motor neuron disease. But then I don't, you know, we're possibly not doing those longitudinal studies, but we certainly do see that in other sports, without a doubt.
Definitely. And you know, if you've had concussion once, you are far more likely to get it again. So if we manage it well the first time round, hopefully we can.
It's a risk factor. It's huge.
Right. So I think we should get on some Mythbusters. We've done a few of them already this episode.
We have.
But there are a few more out there. So I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to throw some at you, Ash.
And
you're going to bust them for us.
I'm going to try. Okay. Throw them my way.
So number one.
Yes.
Wearing a riding hat. What impact does this have on concussion?
Absolutely none. It will protect you. Clearly, it will protect you from more serious injuries, so a skull fracture, and potentially some of the more so the bleeding on the brain. But it will not, from what we've described, because it's inside the brain where the shearing and the stretching takes place. So it won't protect you.
But
you do have to wear them. Yes, saying.
Yes, that is our caveat here. People, don't throw away those riding hats. Please do keep wearing them.
Correct.
They will protect you from a lot of things.
Saying, I don't have to wear my ride. No, that's not what I said at all.
Definitely not. We definitely want people to wear them. They just, when it comes to concussion, are less helpful than some people might think.
Correct.
So we've sort of touched on this one before, but concussion is the same for everybody. Is this true or not?
No, absolutely not. It depends on if you've had a concussion before. It depends on what your situation. If you are severely dehydrated and unfit, it will probably have more of an impact. But there's two areas, certainly, excuse me, in women, we seem that the trend seems to be they're not more susceptible to concussion, but the trend seems to be that the recovery is a little bit longer, and there's we don't know the answer to that yet, whether there's a hormonal influence. We don't know. There's certainly lots of research linked to the cycle, menstrual cycle, and if a concussion occurs. But we definitely do know that there seems to be a slower recovery. And then the really big message is in young. So you're certainly your pre-pubescent. Because the reason for that is when I explained about the neuron, and we think, so the neuron's got this body, it's got these tentacles called dendrites, and then this thing called a myelin sheath. And when we are young, that hasn't been fully formed yet. And we think that if that then gets stretched, the impact of concussions are much worse. So it is certainly something in youngsters to take very, very seriously. And it does take young, and we're starting to understand why that may be. So those are the two areas that certainly we need to be aware. And as you've said, you know, we're all individuals. It may be that I've taken a whole lot of anti-inflammatory so I can get around the course because of my back, and that can also, it just encourages the, as I said, the one thing that hopefully I've given that insight into that metabolic, it kind of starts to make sense where someone who's maybe had five coffees, a couple of Nurofens and cracking on that cross-country course and then has a fall, that may well just increase that metabolic chaos. So that's why it affects us all differently. I think the important is there is no test. You know, so often people say, well, what can you do? Let me, you know, what test? And this is the reason why in this podcast we've spoken so much around what are the signs, what are the symptoms, you know, our first in those 4 hours, recognizing is so important, because as clinicians, we can only treat this with symptoms. You know, if we have a muscle tear, we can do an MRI, we can tell you exactly what grade it is, we can redo it 3 weeks later to say, well, you've got X amount of healing. The only way we know how your brain is doing is through your symptoms. So that's why it's so important to take them seriously, be cognizant of it, and then use that to monitor.
Definitely. And, you know, and making a note of them, writing them down, and also getting the people around you as well, because it might be a case that some of them you're not actually going to notice. You might not notice that you're having mood changes and things like that. So getting the people around you as well to be aware of the situation and listening to what they're telling you.
Yeah, I think talking to some of the riders, certainly, and sort of looking back when they've reflected on sometimes where the concussions have gone on for quite some time, is also there's a sense, and one of the areas when we talk about more risk for post-concussion is the mental health. That I know we are, it's not about it, you know, and people quick say, oh, it's all in their head. Well, obviously, a lot of the damage has occurred in your brain, but I think that's also important too, that anxiety sometimes stays with you for quite a while, and I think that's important to be able to talk to someone about it and to recognize it, that actually it's part of it. It's a really recognized part of concussion. So you know, absolutely, you know, my parting comment will always be, speak to someone who's experienced in managing this, understand your symptoms, and you will manage this a lot better.
Yeah, I think that mental health piece is a really important one that people often overlook, because, you know, you're so focused on the physical side of things, the fact that you've got a headache or you're a bit wobbly or whatever. But as you say, you know, this is stuff going on in your brain, and your brain dictates all of that side of things. It's no wonder there's a link.
Exactly. And also you've got it's having, you know, if you're you know, someone who wants to go and compete and you're saying, well, no, you can't do that. Or you've got someone that actually, I've got to go and do a job of work and I'm struggling to actually work. So that becomes an added stress. If you're a school child, or you at university and you're struggling to concentrate, and you've got exams coming up. So you've got all of this that also adds to the anxiety. And I think that's why it's important to mention it as well. And it's certainly in my sort of list of when I'm looking at concussion, is it's important that it's one of the areas that I look at. And, you know, we obviously in the World Class program can use questionnaires and can be very objective about that. But it's again raising everyone's awareness as to the impact of these, or the potential impact of these injuries.
Now, I think as we're coming to the end, I think, of this conversation, it's been a very in-depth one and a very interesting one. And I hope everyone listening agrees with me there.
Hope so. Hope we haven't sent them all to sleep.
Yes, or just terrified them from ever. Yeah, or concussed, or terrified them from just getting on a horse again. Hopefully not.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, I sort of partly feel like I've wrung your brain dry of facts here, but I'm sure there's plenty more in there. What would be your kind of big take home message, or some top tips, or anything like that, anything that we haven't covered yet so far?
You know, one of my top tips is for equestrian riders is learn how to fall. And I know I did an article a couple of months ago now, I can't remember who it was for, but and one of the things that I do think, and they certainly do this in horse racing, is learn how to fall, because that can protect you. Absolutely, it can protect you. So I said a bit tongue in cheek, but I am quite serious about that. My top tip is always around how do you, and again, this is around how do you, there's a lot of people say you can't prevent a concussion, and of course some of these high speed mechanisms, you it'll be hard to prevent it. But I do think the better shape you're in, I think, and I'm going to come back to, as everyone knows, I'm going to come back to hydration, because we know just in a normal brain, if you're 2% dehydrated, it affects your cognitive ability. So therefore, that to me makes complete sense that if you're dehydrated and then have a concussion, it's going to make it worse. So it's always being that it's just keeping yourself in the best possible shape. And then, as I've said, I think a number of times on the podcast, is do seek help. Do seek help and speak to a professional, doctor, physio, and get some guidance early on, because that'll be absolutely that what will help you to recover this. And then we've got a lot of resources that are available to everyone, and please do have a look at them. And I think your awareness of this is for me, this is about empowering the equestrian world to actually just raise that awareness, manage well, not to stop anything, but to actually just make sure that we are looking after one another and yourselves better.
Absolutely spot on there. As you've mentioned, there are some great resources on our website. If you go to britishequestrian.org.uk, there is a whole page there full of concussion resources. There's some guidance that Ash just was very integral in putting together, along with Anna Louise, who's our chief medical officer. Loads of great stuff there, so give that a read. That also outlines that graduated process that we mentioned there. There's also a digital version of our fold-out concussion cards. You may have seen these around. We've been out giving them out at events and things. We've also had them on social media. They are going out very well. But there's a digital version on there. Or if you would prefer the physical version, you can send us a stamped address envelope, and the address is on the website, and we will pop one in the post for you. Outside of our website, Ash, have you got any other sort of resources or places people can go to find out more information about concussion?
I think the NHS is doing, there's 2 years ago, the government is doing a huge push. There's a real recognition at government level that we're not doing enough in this space. So the NHS guidelines, and we can just, I don't know the full hashtag, so we'll just double check that. ISEH, which is the Institute of Sport and Exercise Health, their website gives some really good advice, and is probably one of the centres where you can contact someone for advice. So those would be my go-to. And I think now there is, backed by the research and also backed by the government, really pushing us to be better across the board at managing concussion has been recognised, not just in sport, but in just everyday walk of life. So I think it's great to see.
So there you go. That is a great list for you. Those external ones outside of the British Equestrian own ones, we will put those on the website as well, so you can link there and get on and, you know, clue yourself up on all of this. And as you say, get educated, look after yourselves, look after each other as well. And as I've mentioned, check out our social media channels as well, because there's lots of stuff going out there over the past couple of weeks. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. I hope Ash has fascinated you and educated you as much as she has me. We love having you here, because you tell us so many interesting things. It's brilliant. And hopefully we will have a second podcast on concussion coming up for you as well, to talk a little bit more about the sort of the lived experiences with concussion, and some notable name hopefully will be joining us. I shall leave you with a bit of anticipation there. We hope you have enjoyed listening to us, and we hope you will join us again soon. Thank you very much, everyone, and goodbye.